The show is live and local. It's your local performance connection. And on today's show, we do have a performance or two that will happen in our studio with violinist Nicholas Kendall. Nick Kendall is a soloist this weekend, Friday and Saturday with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra on a piece called Spontaneous Combustion. It's by Chris Brubeck, who's the son of the great jazz man Dave Brubeck. And it was a piece written for Nick Kendall. And we're actually having a little technical trouble. We do hope to be giving you a sample of that piece. But he also has his fiddle with him, and he'll do a couple of solo pieces. He's involved with a number of other groups as well, including, most prominently, Time for Three, which we've had conversations about on this radio show a couple of times in the last couple of years. They've been in our area. They're a classical trio with a twist, or a classical garage band, as they were called in our previous conversation. So I've got a little bit of their music in just a moment. But I also have coming up a conversation about the film Mozart's Sister, as in Mozart's sister. His older sister, Maria Anna, nicknamed Nannerl, figures prominently in stories about Mozart's life. She was also a composer and performer. And so an interesting film that is showing for two nights only at the Art Theater in downtown Champaign, tonight and tomorrow. So we thought we'd have a little focus on that later on in the show. It's live and local on FM 90.9. That was a group called Time for Three, and started with a little bit of a fiddle improv and ended up with a fiddle set, including a tune called Jerusalem Ridge. And Time for Three, well, as you might expect, has three members in the group. They are violinists Zach Depew and Nick Kendall, and also bassist Renan Meyer. They've been in our area a couple of times, but more to the point, Nick Kendall is here with us on the show today, right now, because he's performing this week with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra Friday night in Bloomington at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, and Saturday night in Springfield at Sangamon Auditorium. Both of those shows start at 8 o'clock. The program includes John Adams' Short Ride in a Fast Machine, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Those are already two fairly combustible pieces. And then there's a piece by Chris Brubeck, called Spontaneous Combustion, which is written for and with Nick Kendall. Guest conductor, I should mention, for that concert is Alistair Willis. He is one of the candidates for music director for the Illinois Symphony. All their guest conductors this year are coming twice, and we'll get to talk with Mr. Willis when he is with the symphony second time around, performing with the chamber orchestra in the spring. But Nick Kendall is here. He's got not only Time for Three and concerto gigs, but also some solo things, and plays in a string quartet and plays in a chamber orchestra and all kinds of other business, including spending some time on YouTube, so you can check him out on there. Thanks very much for coming in.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
And this is a whirlwind show of sorts, because computers and technology are wonderful for bringing music and burning music, but when they don't work right.
Oh man. Well, thanks to you and all the great crew here at the station for helping us out. But
well,
I think we're ready.
Yeah. Well, we've heard a little bit from Time for Three. So tell me a little bit about what Nick Kendall is about. I was actually trying to tell somebody earlier, because you know my take was, you're about classical music, but you're also about sort of expanding. What does that even mean?
Well, yeah, I guess it's sort of elusive. I come from the world of classical music. I definitely value the experience that happens within a concert hall, through music that I guess comes from silence. I'm a consumer, and I enjoy many different kind of experiences. I mean, you know, I go to clubs, I go to jazz concerts, rock concerts, but I really love, and I've grown up loving the experience in a concert hall. You'll have to pardon my voice. For some reason, I'm sort of losing it, but I guess you can hear me okay.
That's what microphones are for.
That's right. But as a young kid, I started with the Suzuki method. My grandfather was one of the pioneers of the movement from Japan to America and pretty much the rest of the world. So I always grew up listening and playing, and the positive vibes that you get from group class, doing something very productive and group-oriented with peers doing the same thing. But also the fact that I'm half Japanese, I spent a lot of time as a young kid. Actually, I went to school in Japan. And especially during the summer times, there were these cultural festivals that happened. And I was very engaged and attracted to the sound of the taiko drummers, which is very famous tradition in Japan, these huge drums. And my mom always said that while other 3 or 4 year olds would kind of shy away from the sound, I would actually sort of want to get closer to it. So I've rhythm and improvisation and the music that comes from all of those experiences has always been attracted to me. In fact, in seventh grade, this is all while playing violin. I started playing officially when I was 3 years old, violin. But I wanted a drum set in seventh grade or sixth grade or something. My parents refused because they didn't want the noise of the drums in the basement, which I totally understand. But I ended up improvising and putting my own drum set together with pots and pans and garbage cans and all this. And this is while I was growing up in Washington, D.C. So in eighth grade, ninth grade, and 10th grade, I got my friends together, and we had this funk hip-hop drumming band made out of trash cans and paint buckets. And we used to play in the streets of in Georgetown and for all the tourists that came to D.C. But I've always had... I've always loved classical music, and I've always heard music as a language. Perhaps they're just different dialects. And so I found a life that can, and I built a musical career that allows me to be have different outputs for my musical expressions. I think in the past they have been a little bit more segmented or segregated from each other. I had my band experience. I'd play my concertos. I'd have my string quartet, the string orchestra that you mentioned that I formed. But now kind of all these worlds are coming together, and I think that's kind of the exciting time that we're starting to come into, where genres are blurring together. It's less about whether it's a rock record or if it's a soul R&B album or if it's just pure classical music. All of those genres that I just mentioned are cross-pollinating in such unique, interesting, exciting ways. And I feel like myself and other young artists that are coming up are part of this genre-less sort of, we desire the and we love the opportunity to be expressive in a unique way that kind of encompasses all of those experiences into one.
Well, when you say your band, I assume you're talking about Time for Three.
Yes, I do talk about Time for Three, but then in high school I also had like a real rock and roll band where I played electric violin and played drums.
So you graduated from the Pots and Pans at some point.
Almost, you, yeah. Almost graduated. I can now afford real drums, and maybe we'll talk about it more in this concerto, but I sort of wrap all of this up in this concerto that I'm playing here with the Illinois Symphony.
Well, since you talked about it, mm-hmm. let's talk about it.
All right.
Chris Brubeck is the composer, technically, but I was looking at some YouTube things, and it sounds like you're co-composers, really.
I think it's a really exciting time in how new music is being built, put this in quotations, because you do have a lot of improvisers coming out of the classical music genre who are creative, but don't have the skill, the knowledge, the penmanship, the scope that a composer has. And you also have to have an open-minded composer who is willing to collaborate with the artist. And there's a few examples of this happening. And this Chris is a prime example of this new movement. And yes, this was a complete collaboration. This all happened actually through a mutual friend of ours, Randy Fleischer, who is the music director of the Anchorage Symphony Orchestra in Alaska and Flagstaff Symphony at the time and the Hudson Valley Symphony. And Randy engaged me as a solo. I played Sibelius violin concerto at the time. It was Crigliano, the Suite from the Red Violin, the movie. And I played these concertos, but then there was one time where I sort of wanted to take a chance, and I did a complete improv encore afterwards, and he heard this and he said, "Wow, I didn't know you do all that." And I said, "Well, it's just something I'm experimenting with." And he said, "Well, what's your dream? I mean, what do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, gosh, you know, honestly, I really would love to have a concerto where it took the structure of the symphony orchestra, but somehow allowed me to be completely spontaneous in and around that, a improv concerto of some sort." And he said, "Wow, I know exactly who should write this or you should collaborate with." And I said, "I was thinking maybe some student graduate from some university," but he said, "Chris Brubeck." And I'm like, "Come on." Mm-hmm. "You mean the legendary son of the son of the legendary pianist, jazz pianist, Dave?" And he said, "Absolutely."
Who's become not a small legend himself.
Chris is an incredible performer. And an incredible
trombonist.
He's a trombonist in his band. He plays trombone, piano, and also bass. But he's also an incredible composer. So we set out. Chris was just totally open-minded. We spent 4 days in his home in Connecticut, and what we did was he set up a recording device, GarageBand, on the Apple computer, and we jammed for 3 days. And jam doesn't necessarily mean all high speed stuff. Jam in the sense that it was completely open-minded. We recorded our conversations. We took walks and we ate together, hung out with the family. And we took all these things that we caught on tape and put it together. And what he was able to do is take a lot of the crazy stuff that came out of my head through my violin. And was able to create this amazing three-movement concerto and orchestrate it. And actually, the second movement was a jam session that started and ended in one just stream of consciousness with him playing this really amazing keyboard he has with actually the sound of the London Symphony strings on his keyboard. But he accompanied me, or not accompanied, we just played together. And the second movement is actually a complete orchestration of what happened in one of those moments. And it's really cool.
So you recorded it. He recorded what was orchestrated. I mean, he orchestrated what was recorded.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what the Illinois Symphony and you will be playing.
That's
so
right.
You'll be kind of recreating your own improvisation.
Yeah, well.
Or doing a new one.
Every time is different. Yeah. I mean, there's some moments where there's structure because, you know, you can have completely free improv sessions, which are great. But it's always great to come from a structure. I mean, after all, everything in life freedom comes from discipline or something structured. And in this case, why have an orchestra? Well, it can give you that solid foundation. That's something that we can all bring our ears to, that the thing that can hold up the life, the spontaneity, the in-the-moment expression that really takes place in this piece. And you have to go to the live thing to hear it.
Although we do have a recording of, I assume this was a live one.
Yeah,
this
is a live performance. And let's see, I think maybe we'll play the beginning of it. I'm not going to play too close to the beginning because there's some surprises that I don't want to give away because you have to actually
come to the show. That's right.
But I'm going to give a demonstration just of the opening. Because it's very standard, it's very beautiful.
This is the opening of the first movement.
Of the concerto written by Chris Brubeck for myself. The concerto is called Spontaneous Combustion. And the first I'm going to play, and in the booth there, I'm going to, if you could just roll it up slowly so we don't, so hold on one second.
So this is you with what orchestra?
Technically I'm not, because this is a...
We can't talk about what orchestra it is.
All right, but
enough.
It's a really wonderful band, and they're totally awesome. So stand by.
Nick Kendall from the piece Spontaneous Combustion by Chris Brubeck, which is going to be played live by himself with the Illinois Symphony coming up Friday and Saturday night.
Thank you.
So those were two excerpts we heard first at the very beginning of the piece by Chris Brubeck called Spontaneous Combustion, composed with and performed by Nicholas Kendall and an unnamed orchestra. And then we faded down and then speeded up a little bit or skipped ahead to what he called the good part of the first movement.
the fun part.
Yeah, the fun part. Well, you could hear why. You know, it's a little bit of sort of Copland Bernstein dance kind of fun music, you know, that sounds very American.
It's all very American. And we wanted, in this first movement, there's a lot of play with rhythm, a lot of the offbeat that you find in reggae. But of course, the big band is in there and swing jazz. Right where we just sort of faded out is where I start completely going off the page. Everything up until that point is somewhat written. I mean, it's definitely written out for the orchestra, but for me, I'm playing two part. But then everything from here on out is kind of whatever happens in the spur of the moment. And that's the fun part coming up. But you have to come to the live show for that.
Well, speaking of live shows, the Illinois Symphony will be playing with Nick Kendall Friday night at, let me get the right, that one's the one in Bloomington.
Correct.
At Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, and then Saturday at Springfield's Sangamon Auditorium. Both of those shows are at 8 o'clock. But you're also doing, I saw here, somebody sent me this from our news department. You're going to be playing tomorrow for a little bit at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield for all of half an hour or something like that.
I grew my beard out just for...
Seriously? Is that why?
No.
Well, I have seen a couple of pictures with you with the beard, but... I didn't know if they were current or not, and you walk in and you've got it.
So I guess they were. Well, man,
so are you just playing, doing some solo stuff during that half an hour?
And I believe there's some young kids, young people coming to that that thing. But I think, or is it just, I'm looking at all the people here in the studio, so it's just me
doing a
presentation for whoever wants to come hear me.
Great. Well, you brought your violin.
I did.
Speaking of spontaneous. You can either give us a preview of tomorrow or you can just do whatever you want to do.
Because tomorrow, who knows what the weather will be like.
I don't know what it's going to be like. I read the forecast and I've forgotten it. Well, this is Nick Kendall, and he's going to do whatever he's going to do with his fiddle here after he gets it in tune on Live and Local. Let me mention while he's doing that our broadcast today is made possible by the Illinois State University School of Music, presenting the ISU Wind Symphony this Thursday at 8 p.m. at the Center for the Performing Arts. The program will include a premiere of David Maslanka's Symphony No. 9 and a performance of Maslanka's double horn concert called Sea Dreams. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Nick Kendall is live on the show. Thank you. Nick Kendall with a spontaneous composition on the solo violin live in our studio here on Live and Local. Nick went to a school that I almost thought about going to once, or at least thought of applying to once. Yeah, I remember going by when I was a kid, the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia on Rittenhouse Square.
Has a great football program.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
Just kidding.
Now it's one of the great conservatories, and studied there with Viktor Danchenko. And actually debuted with the National Symphony and the St. Louis Symphony, not far from here.
Nope.
Won their young artist competitions. It's fantastic. And I'll bet you that Curtis didn't teach you anything about classical improv.
No, not then. Not back then. There was one teacher who back then was very, very pushing the envelope, Ford Lallerstadt. Who actually back then, I think he came out with a whole 2-disc album of piano improvisation. But he taught voice leading, music history, music theory, but voice harmony, voice leading, and ear training. Sorry, I'm mixing a lot of different programs into new words and new things. But he was always pushing the envelope. I unfortunately only had like 3 or 4 coachings with him on sonatas, mostly early music. And he was a huge inspiration just with ornamentation, experimenting with a chord progression of a Bach solo sonata or partita, but then, you know, taking the figured bass line and then having us improvise something around it.
Which almost sounds a little bit like what you started
I
to
just
do with
was
this
doing
thing,
that right? Now. I was feeling based on what we just played, I'd take us to another palette. But it was more in the Bach or Baroque style that I was doing. At Curtis there wasn't that much of that, but it was not frowned upon because that's how Time for Three met. We were the only people back then who were, you know, improvising or freestyling on our instruments in the student body. And these jam sessions would happen, you know, after the orchestra rehearsals or late night. We'd get into the concert hall there at Curtis and set the lights for a nice mood. And we'd have these jam sessions. And we actually, there was another cellist, part of the our friend who's now the new principal cellist of the Seattle Symphony, F.A. Baltitigil. And he did a lot of improvisation sessions with us, but and it started growing, and now we hear that a lot of these things sort of take place at Curtis now. The kids just getting together, and some of them play guitar. Apparently there's one of the bass players has an electric bass, and they are starting to get into really taking the experience of what we call classical music to another level, and that's really exciting. Love hearing that.
Well, we've had Time for Three on here. I've mentioned this earlier a couple of times. We haven't had the group. One of these days, you guys are going to come in
come
where the schedule will work so that you can come into the studio.
We'd love to.
Hasn't happened so far. Mike, if you would switch CDs, the one that I'd given over earlier, we're going to do a little bit from Time for Three. Originally, I'd said track 6. I'd kind of like to hear Blackbird off of there, if that's all right with Nick.
Sure.
This track 7, and this is Time for Three from a live performance at the Colorado Music Festival just this past August.
Yes, and hopefully maybe you will hear some talking. I don't know. These are just raw tracks, so we'll see.
We'll see what we get.
Yeah.
Time for Three here on Live and Local. Thank you. And we took that down before we got to the band joining in on the Beatles tune Blackbird from a performance of Time for Three, a nice sort of subdued bit. They were live at the Colorado Music Festival this past August. And one of their two violinists, one is Zach Depew, the other is Nick Kendall. Nick is going to be with the Illinois Symphony twice this weekend, Friday night at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts at 8 o'clock, and Saturday night in Springfield at Sangamon Auditorium. Alistair Willis is the guest conductor and one of their music director candidates. We'll talk with him when he's back with the Illinois
awesome.
Chamber Orchestra. That's what it sounds like.
He's so cool.
He's done a lot of stuff. And then Nick Kendall playing with them the piece by Chris Brubeck that we sampled earlier called Spontaneous Combustion. And we have coming up in just a couple minutes conversation about a film called Mozart's Sister, which is about Mozart's sister, as you might expect. And if you didn't know much about her, it's an interesting story. Some of it's sort of reimagined, but that's showing just twice in downtown Champaign at the Art Theater tonight and tomorrow night. So we'll talk about that just a little bit. We don't get to talk about film very often because there's not all that many that focus on the performing arts, at least of all classical music. So we'll give a focus on that. Nick, appreciate your coming in.
Oh,
it's fascinating to hear different things you're involved in.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
You want to give a real quick pitch for your East Coast Chamber Orchestra? You have a new CD coming out.
We do. Otherwise known as ECCO, E-C-C-O, East Coast Chamber Orchestra. This is something I put together right after Curtis. Curtis, is, as you know, it's one of these, everybody there is incredible. And I came from an orchestra that just really, sound at its best time sounds on par with the best symphony orchestras of the world. And I started doing all these professional gigs after leaving, and I just was so just depressed at the professionalism that was, people, I came to every rehearsal, couldn't wait to play Brahms or Shostakovich or whatever, and people around me who had been doing it for a long time, and I understood that, but just didn't have the same enthusiasm. So I went to the Marlborough Music Festival right after I graduated and met all these amazing artists who think idealistically. And so I put together this group of musicians. We're Curtis and Marlborough grads. It's a membership of 28 people, 18 on stage at any one time. We stand. There's no conductor. And we're self-run. We get together two or three times a year. And it's really awesome. We all get together to play the standard repertoire. We're starting to do more new works, but it's a community of artists. If you looked at the roster, some of them are soloists, some of them are principal players of the major orchestras in the U.S., and other people doing interesting projects on their own, like myself. And we're coming out with our first recording, which will be released on E1 Records. We're very grateful for the label being so supportive in this time where record companies are struggling. It's going to be a digital download in the first week of January. So one could go to our website, eastcoastchamberorchestra.com, to just tag it for now. The website will change. But I'm going to give you some of the samples from the recording so maybe
sure.
You can play it. You can also, my website, nickkendall.com, we're going through a lot of revamp. So you can, there's not much going on there. But Time for Three's website, I would invite people to go visit that. There's a new music video, anti-bullying video that we just posted, which is very exciting, has a very exciting message, or an important message. And if people can come to the concert when I'm here in Illinois Symphony. I'm also bringing my drummer. He comes along and plays with me on this concerto.
From Spontaneous Combustion.
Yeah, Gabe Lobohonek. He's from Curtis, but is an amazing jazz drummer. He'll be on stage with me as well.
And for information on how to get tickets to the Illinois Symphony Concert, go to ilsymphony.org. And remember, Nick's also going to be at the Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield tomorrow morning, just for a little bit, from 10:30 to 11. And you can call them for more information. It's, if I have the right number here, 217-785-6085. At least that's the info number that I've got here. But go hear him at the Illinois Symphony. Nick, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. It's great to see you again.
Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's music heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring new exhibits entitled A Century of Stories and Sounds from the Stage, Music, Dance, and Theater in America. More information is available at SousaArchives.org. And on tomorrow's show, we'll be having some folks from the Sousa Archives who are sort of co-presenting a concert called Granny's Porch at the Virginia Theater in downtown Champaign, which I'm actually participating in a little bit, conducting a small orchestra there. And there's some things from the Mikado. So we'll feature that on tomorrow's show. And also, I'll be talking with the guitarist Fareed Haque, who's going to be at the Canopy Club in Urbana tomorrow night. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. That's a bit from one of the Mozart piano quartets. It's the G minor quartet, second movement, performed on the forte piano by Malcolm Bilson, with the violinist Elizabeth Wilcock, violist Jan Schlapp, and the cellist Timothy Mason, here on Live and Local. We're going to talk about this next these next few minutes on the show about a film called Mozart's Sister. It's playing at the Art Theater for two nights only, tonight and tomorrow night in downtown Champaign. Starts at 8 o'clock each night. Described as a reimagination of the early life of Mozart's sister Maria Anna, nicknamed Nannerl, which is how you'll usually see her referred to if you ever read a biography or other references to Mozart, where she does figure along with the rest of their musical family. And with me is the operator of the Art Theater, Sanford Hess, who was kind enough to tell me about the film, which I wasn't otherwise plugged into. Thanks very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
So how did you learn about the film? How recent has it been made? And why just two nights?
Great questions all. I learned about the film the way I learn about a lot of the films, which is through requests by our audience. So people contacted me, usually by email, and asked me about the film. I looked into it. It's actually distributed through Music Box Films out of Chicago. The Music Box Theater is the same company. They do some film distribution. So it is a French film. It was made last year. And the delay in bringing it out is pretty typical for films that are made in a foreign country. They wait for an American company to pick it up, so to speak. The booking of the film for two nights was really related to the schedule. We had an opportunity to slot a movie in. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to play the movie otherwise, because we're heading into a time of year where there's a lot of movies coming
sure.
out. So this is the rush to the Oscar season. So it was an opportunity to say, okay, I'd love to get this up on the screen, have people get a chance to see it, to hear it. And it worked out just for two nights.
And so I opened playing some music by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. A lot of the focus of the film, as I understand it, is about the music of Maria Anna Mozart, not a note of which exists.
Right, right.
How did they resolve that for the film?
Well, they composed some music for the film. Let me just give a really quick synopsis of the film, because
sure.
I think that helps. The film actually is set during a period of time, sort of very specific period of time, where Wolfgang Amadeus is 10. Oh, that's actually what his father says. He's about 11. And his sister, Nannerl, is about 15. So it's really set during this period of time where they're already established as a traveling act. And we sort of are introduced to the family while they're traveling around the different courts of Europe. And we stay with them for probably about 2 or 3 months of time over the course of the story. During that time, there's some wonderful scenes where they're playing in the Palace of Versailles, and we get to see what their act was like. Interesting.
And that's the right term, too. I mean, it really was an act.
That's right. That's right. They actually, unfortunately, they don't show too much of it. But, you know, a lot of it is described, how Wolfgang would say, for example, they'd lay a cloth across the piano, and he would play through the cloth. They don't show that part. But they do have some wonderful scenes. He's playing the violin. She's playing the harpsichord. Or she's singing. He also plays the harpsichord at times. So there's some nice scenes of that. But interestingly, Wolfgang Amadeus is really a side character. It is truly about Nannerl. And it's a little bit of a sort of dangerous liaisons kind of story, in the sense that there's different people and there's romance and they pass notes. And it's sort of this very classical sort of love story, young love story of romantic interest. And then at the same time, as part of that, she is encouraged to start writing music. And so in the movie, we sort of see the beginning of her writing the music. As you mentioned, there is no music that we have that she did write. And they sort of address that because they talk about the way her father interacted with the two kids. And definitely, as you watch the movie, you can see that he promotes Wolfgang Amadeus, but really sort of pushes down Nannerl and her interests. So in the movie, we watch her compose music and listen to her compose music. And what I found interesting was that as they started the process of her writing music, it sounded a lot like Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. It was very derivative of something he might write. But then as the movie went on, she sort of developed her own voice. And there was a modern day composer who did compose this new music, imagining as she could what kind of music Nannerl would write.
Which has to be, I mean, there's plenty of instances, including like in most famously in the more famous Mozart's own Requiem, where people have tried to recreate parts that he didn't finish. But the advantage was you have all the rest of Mozart's music to say, well, he might have done it this way. And I wonder if you've read anything about how she went about doing that, where there were no samples of her music to come up with.
Right. And I think she just sort of took from the director's statement and some other information I read, she essentially took the music that Mozart was writing. And again, this is remembering that she was writing this at about 15 or 16 when he was composing the pieces. He was at about 10 or 11. And said, well, if you took that as sort of a starting point, what would somebody take and do with that? And again, I mean, the first couple of pieces are pretty derivative. But then, here to me, I have to admit, it sounded a little modern almost, some of the music that they came in with. But it does sort of have its own voice, and it is very different. Yet the instruments, of course, are the same instruments that you would hear. You know, a lot of it is played on the harpsichord. One of the nice things about this film is it's a period of time, and it's set among the French nobility, where everybody played music. So, you know, you walk into a room, and there's other characters just happen to be sitting and playing the harpsichord. And then there's a discussion of, oh, do you play? Oh, I do. And then, somebody else will sit down and play music. So music runs throughout the music, throughout the movie. And and it sort of culminates in actually a small performance with about 12 to 15 musicians playing some of these pieces. And there I found it was much different from a Mozart kind of sound. It was very much something you might hear more often today as sort of a modern composition.
So it's an updating in more ways than one, where it's a reimagining of her life because we don't know all that much about it.
Right.
So there's a mix, I assume, as in the film Amadeus, of fact and fiction.
Exactly. It was a launching point from what we know, but with all those empty spaces sort of filled in with story.
Why not? It makes for a good story. What kind of response has it had from critics and viewers over the time it's been out so far that you've read?
Well, I can only speak personally how I liked it. But I mean, critics have responded to it. It's a beautiful film. It was filmed on location in these palaces around Europe and abbeys, and the settings are magnificent. The costumes are amazing. At one point, I was sitting in the theater and I was hearing this noise, and it sounded, I couldn't place it. And as a theater operator, I'm always worried about, well, what is this? Was there some kind of problem with the sound? And I realized it was one of the characters was wearing this tremendous dress. And the way that the filmmaker chose to make this movie, it's very natural light and natural sound, meaning that they would essentially set up microphones in the room and film with just the natural light. So you're hearing all this noise from their costumes, which are these tremendous, very complex dresses that they wear. So you definitely get a feel for the time and a feel for what the characters were going through. Similarly, the scenes of the Mozart family traveling really make you appreciate that they were going from court to court in Europe. There are these tremendously long stagecoach trips in between, where they're just the four of them were sort of crammed into this very small space for weeks going between performance to performance. So you get a new respect for the type of lifestyle that they lived.
Without the benefit of rubber tires on their wooden wheels.
Exactly. At one point, they talk about going from Paris to London and how it's only a 12-hour boat ride. It just seems so fast, to which most of us think, oh, my Lord, 12 hours in the channel.
You can get halfway across the United States in that amount of time.
That's right.
Almost. Pretty close.
Yeah, but the critics in general have enjoyed the film. Everybody comments on the style. Most people, the performances, and actually sort of an interesting sort of multi-layer thing. The movie is about the father, Mozart's relationship with his daughter, but the actress who plays the daughter is the daughter of the director.
Hmm.
Yet she's tremendous. She's really fabulous in the role.
It's called Mozart's Sister. It's at the Art Theater in downtown Champaign. Two nights only, tonight and tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Art Theater located on West Church Street, right in downtown. And what's the website for the art, Sanford?
The website is www.thecuart.com.
Thecuart.com. And Sanford Hess is the operator of the theater. There's always wonderful films there, some of them first run, some of them things you're not going to see anywhere else, like this one. And I appreciate you coming in.
Thank you for having me.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And we have support for our show today from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector, the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. This is 90.9 WYNL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. I'm Kevin Kelly for Live and Local. I don't have the ability to reimagine music by Nannerl Mozart, and we don't have music from the soundtrack. So you're stuck with Wolfgang Amadeus. Here's a little bit of the opening of his first violin concerto, which was one of his earlier concertos.